now recording.
It is estimated that approximately 1 to 3% of the Canadian population lives with a developmental disability. Traditionally, this refers to people with impaired cognitive abilities and limitations in adaptive functioning, which have their onset before the age of 18. The causes of developmental disabilities are varied and often unknown. This population often has specific health concerns and can be complex yet rewarding patients to work with. On today's show, we'll be speaking with Dr. Bill Sullivan, a family doctor at the Surrey Place Centre in Toronto, about healthcare for people with developmental disabilities. Good afternoon. You're listening to the Health Justice Radio Collective on McMaster's CFMU 93.3. I'm your host, Allison. Here with us today is Dr. Bill Sullivan, a family physician at the Surrey Place Centre and the Family Practice Unit of St. Mike's Hospital in Toronto. He's leading a provincial initiative to improve the health and quality of life of adults with developmental disabilities through training and resource development for primary healthcare providers. So welcome, Dr. Sullivan. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
It's great to have you here. So I'd like to start with some basic questions. The first one being, how do we define what a developmental disability is?
Well, I think that your introductory remarks were quite accurate. The two terms that are commonly used are developmental disabilities or intellectual disabilities, and they're used synonymously in Canada. The term that's used in the United Kingdom is actually learning disabilities.
Okay.
So people might hear that term as well. And these terms are generally referring to a range of conditions in which there are lifelong limitations in intellectual functioning and conceptual, social, and practical skills that are noticeable before the age of 18 years.
Okay. So you mentioned that it's interchangeable with the term intellectual disability.
Yes.
So does having a developmental disability also mean someone can have a physical disability? Is that a different category, or can those be...
Yes, those two issues overlap. So someone may have a physical disability but not meet the criteria for an intellectual disability.
Okay. And what are the different kinds of forms of developmental disabilities?
Well, it is quite a heterogeneous group because the main... difference would be in level of disability from what's referred to as a mild level of developmental disability all the way to severe and profound.
Okay.
And so there's quite a broad range of disabilities. So whenever we talk about the population with a developmental or intellectual disability, it's a very broad group.
Mm-hmm.
But another distinction would be the cause of the disability.
Right.
And many people with disabilities will have no known cause for their disability. It's estimated at about half of the people.
Wow.
Currently, we don't know the basis of the disability.
Mm.
For the other half, there are various reasons. The most common one would be some chromosomal problem.
Okay.
So that they were born with either a deletion or some other problem with at the level of their chromosomes.
Mm-hmm.
So the most common example would be Down syndrome.
Okay.
An extra chromosome results in the syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the main things I'd like to discuss in this interview, because this is the Health Justice Radio Collective, we often talk about, different aspects of people's lives or their social situations, mm-hmm. things that can affect their health outcomes. So I wanted to ask you how having a developmental disability can actually affect someone's health outcomes throughout their life.
Well, it is, I think, helpful to kind of think of having a developmental disability as a certain health risk. And the sorts of factors that would affect health outcomes would include things like age, and mm-hmm. people with developmental disabilities are aging much more commonly now. Whether there is a coexisting physical or mental health condition, their level of functioning, mm-hmm. The environment that they are in, and the types of supports that they mm-hmm. receive. So these are variables that will have an impact on this determinant of health, mm-hmm. Which is one way of thinking about a disability. Mm-hmm. And so all those factors will affect health outcomes. I think a key issue would be kind of at least what we try to promote in training primary care providers is the importance of recognizing the physical and mental health mm-hmm. issues that might be of concern and addressing them appropriately, making sure that people are aware of kind of the vulnerabilities that people have mm-hmm. and are able to support them properly, mm-hmm. which includes ensuring that the environment that they're in is also supportive mm-hmm. and enabling. Mm-hmm. So all those things we think can really affect health outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You mentioned some of the specific physical and mental health concerns that you might have to look out for in this population. And I know that the patient population is quite diverse, as you mentioned at the beginning. But just to, for an example, possibly, if we could talk about, say, someone with Down syndrome, what are some of the kind of special concerns that we might have for that patient?
Right. One way of thinking about what's special about people's health is leading causes of mortality. Mm-hmm. And again, it's a very broad group, but as a summary of leading causes of death, they are different than the general population.
Okay.
And much of our preventative measures address the leading causes of death in the general population.
Right.
And so I think that that's just a clue to kind of think about what's different. What some people might be surprised to know is that the leading cause of death in general for people with a developmental disability is a respiratory cause.
Okay.
And that is not in the top three for the general population.
Mm. That's very interesting.
And so when you think of a particular condition such as Down syndrome, mm-hmm. We know that there are issues that may contribute to respiratory problems. One of the issues is that they are more likely to have obesity and to have reflux.
Okay.
And another condition that would be more common in general for people with developmental disabilities would be a seizure disorder.
Okay.
And so you can imagine that there may be a scenario where someone has a seizure, they aspirate mm-hmm. because they are prone to having reflux, mm-hmm. and they develop a pneumonia.
Okay.
And so that would then be regarded as a respiratory cause of death.
Okay.
Another, continuing with Down syndrome, we actually prepared what's called a health watch table that goes through the various systems just mm-hmm. to highlight things that are unique and need to be kind of looked for. And related to respiratory conditions is the very high incidence of something called obstructive sleep apnea. Mm-hmm. So people with Down syndrome are very prone to having problems with their breathing at night,
okay.
which, of course, if if people don't sleep well, they don't feel well during the day.
Right.
And it's a you know, a fairly correctable condition that, mm-hmm. that could really improve their quality of life.
So talking about these physical health concerns, the things like obstructive sleep apnea, reflux. Now, in these kinds of patients, you know, often people will come into their doctor, they'll have certain symptoms that they're feeling, and they'll communicate those to their physician. In a population that is possibly has trouble communicating what they're feeling, potentially nonverbal patients, what are some methods that you use to kind of elucidate what they're experiencing?
Right. Yeah, so in that regard, caring for people with a developmental disability who have communication difficulties is analogous, I think, to the sort of challenges that people face when caring for young children that also present with symptoms but can't tell you what's wrong. An important message, I think, is that behavior is communication.
Mm-hmm.
So people tell you by changes in their behavior, in their usual types of behavior.
Okay.
And that's usually how we find out. I think the other point is because there are, you know, many systems that need to be working well for people to feel well and be healthy, one of the things that we've been promoting is the idea of a preventive care assessment that is adapted for people with developmental disabilities.
Okay.
And we happen to know that, at least in the province of Ontario, these sorts of assessments are not done very frequently for people with developmental disabilities. And there's very good evidence from double-blind randomized controlled trials that have been done in Australia that just by doing this sort of preventive care assessment on a annual or even twice a yearly basis, we'll pick up many of these conditions that are easily addressed and can have a huge impact on people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
One example would be some sensory problem. So either a visual problem or a hearing problem that is picked up can make a big difference.
Right. So just by, you know, checking for that on a yearly basis, that I guess would prevent a lot of problems and behavioral changes that might result.
They could, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Next, one of the other factors that you mentioned that affects health outcomes for this population is the environment that they're living in. And now I just want to discuss quickly what types of factors in the environment you're referring to. So whether it be kinds of day programs, supports in the home, is there anything else?
Well, yes, I think that it's sort of referred to as an enabling environment. An environment that is kind of built for the person. So for many people without disabilities, they adapt to the environments that they need to cope with. Whereas this capacity to adapt may be limited for someone with a developmental disability.
Okay.
And so attention to environmental factors and modifying them so that they are not a source of stress for people is important.
Mm-hmm.
I guess an example would be, for instance, someone with autism or on the autistic spectrum disorders who has difficulties when there's a lot of sound or with certain types of light or crowded environments, just to be aware of that and to adjust their environment so that those factors that cause them distress are minimized as best as possible.
Okay. I like that term that you used, ableing, because in all these contexts, you know, we always use the word disability.
Yeah.
But it's nice to look at it from the other side, and by adapting someone's environment, you can really give them abilities and enable them. So
yeah.
I like that term. Good. Now, the other factor that you mentioned is age. And I know we've seen in the past few years, especially this generation, as you mentioned, there's an aging population in general, but also in people with developmental disabilities. And do you think that is changing the kinds of concerns that we might have for this population? Are there new things that are coming up with the fact that they're aging?
Yes, the issues of aging are different than the issues of having a developmental disability, mm-hmm. and so it sort of compounds
right.
the sorts of challenges that people face. I think the other factor is that in the past, this was primarily the primary discipline that would be involved in caring for people with developmental disabilities were pediatricians.
Okay.
And I expect that at a certain point in history, many of their patients were then graduating to go on to being cared for by people that are more commonly caring for people who are adults.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that transition issue that mm-hmm. arises as a part of this aging question.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge really is to ensure that the people who are trained to care for adults have the appropriate skills and attitudes mm-hmm. to also care well for people with developmental disabilities who now are adults.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that brings us to our next question, actually. So talking about the skills of healthcare providers, so especially, well, primary care physicians, but everyone involved in healthcare, do you think that they're is a lack of understanding about this patient population? Do you think that there should be more training and more skills for these people?
Yeah. Well, in general, I think that people get good at the things that they encounter frequently. And I think that historically, for a variety of reasons, caring for people with a developmental disability has not been a frequent part of the practices of many family physicians and nurses, at least in the province of Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, some of the reasons for that had to do with the establishment of institutions
mm-hmm.
Where people with developmental disabilities would live most of their lives. And so there was a small group of people who would develop expertise, but it wasn't generalized.
Yeah.
And I trained not that long ago,
mm-hmm.
In the 80s, going through medical school at the University of Toronto, we had very little teaching,
mm-hmm.
particularly about issues that had to do with adults. So I think that that's been part of the reason historically for kind of a lack of understanding of these issues. People just have not been exposed to them. I think another element of training that is something that we emphasize is also the importance of attitude. And these are basically lifelong chronic conditions that people have. And I think that medical people are trained to fix things. And there is, it would be easy to understand how someone would feel frustrated because mm-hmm. they actually can't fix somebody's chromosomal mm-hmm. abnormality
right.
that's causing a lot of these problems. But I think that the recognition that there are many helpful things that they can do by applying their skills to help people with developmental disabilities address, you know, physical health concerns and promptly manage other issues that arise should be a source of optimism and hope that they actually have a lot to offer
mm-hmm.
and are very important in the lives of people with developmental disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been sort of an emphasis that we've been involved in with by training family doctors and nurses in the province.
Mm-hmm.
And I must say I'm always very impressed by the sort of people that we've encountered and their care and dedication.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's for all of us that, you know, work in primary care, that it is a matter of kind of learning things that we might not have learned mm-hmm. when we went through medical school, mm-hmm. But also recognizing that they do have, most family docs would have some people with developmental disabilities in their practice.
Right.
And also the issues that we deal with commonly, I think, can be generalized to many other groups of population, mm-hmm. groups of people that family doctors care for, mm-hmm. particularly the elderly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, you had just mentioned the effect of kind of the abolishment of institutions, and I just wanted to touch on that briefly. So I know that it actually wasn't that long ago that the last kind of institutions were gone with, and people were started being integrated more into the community.
Yes.
Have you seen many positive benefits from this type of integration?
Well, I believe that it has, on the whole, been a very positive move for mm-hmm. people with developmental disabilities. A lot of it will depend on whether, in fact, they have actually made that transition, that they're not just in a little institution that is mm-hmm. actually less resourced than the bigger institutions,
okay.
but they are actually living a more of a communal life, mm-hmm. integrated into the community. And, you know, I think that that is still being studied. And
okay.
I suspect that it's quite variable, people's experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other element of that is that they are getting the sort of care that they need, the medical attention that they need. And one of the principles of the deinstitutionalization that we, in fact, this primary care initiative argued for, was that before people were discharged, that there was a proper transfer of information to a community family physician mm-hmm. who would then be accepting responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so many family physicians across the province of Ontario have taken on people with developmental disabilities, and I think have done a great service by kind of making themselves available to mm-hmm. care for folks that are more complex, but I think also much very interesting to
mm-hmm.
care for.
Mm-hmm. On that note, I wanted to ask you personally how you got involved with this population initially. What got you interested?
Well, I think like many people that are in this field, I was drawn by a variety of factors. One area of interest for myself is ethics. And I'm always very interested in getting involved in caring for people who are, particularly vulnerable, and to just understand how we can do that well. As it so happened, when I initially finished my medical training, I became involved in working in group homes in shelters in the city of Toronto. And I was discovering that I was actually meeting a lot of people with developmental disabilities mm. in that context. And I guess subsequently, I became involved in developing guidelines mm-hmm. in this area, which I think led to then training people mm-hmm. About the guidelines and beginning to develop communities of practice in the province. So we see a very important element of working in this area is that people actually, the caregivers are adequately supported by their peers
mm-hmm.
who kind of understand the issues and struggle with similar issues, and that they're able to connect with one another. So I think that it's been an introduction for me to a group of people that have, such a wide range of challenges and mm-hmm. vulnerabilities, but also to a group of healthcare providers who are, trying their best to address some of those issues.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned some of your goals in creating the guidelines that you were talking about. So things like more knowledge for primary care physicians, things like the health watch tables to help them with the primary care. Now, do you think that these kinds of goals, have they been reached? Do we still have more work to do? What's the status of that project right now?
Yes, yeah, so the I guess the project you're referring to is this Developmental Disabilities Primary Care Initiative, which has been a five-year project, and we're just finishing our fifth year.
Okay.
And the main goal of the project was to try to improve the health and quality of life of Ontarians with developmental disabilities.
Okay.
And our focus has been adults and supporting family physicians and nurse practitioners in this work. I think that in the process of the initiative, we've learned a lot. And one thing that we know now is actually how many people there are in the province who are adults with developmental disabilities.
Mm.
So it's about 66,000
okay.
People. And we also know that how we're doing on various guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, one of our guidelines is the importance of doing a kind of a comprehensive preventive care assessment
mm-hmm.
On an annual basis, or at least regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that in the province, only about 20% of the 66,000 actually have such an assessment.
Mm.
And the other thing that is actually not known is how effective that assessment is, whether they're actually adapting the sort of assessment that's used for the general population to address the particular needs of people with developmental disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect it's much less than 20%.
Right.
So, I mean, we have a goal, which mm-hmm. is to improve that, because we know that there's very good evidence for the benefit for people with developmental disabilities. We have the tools to help people do that.
Mm-hmm.
We've developed a preventive care checklist mm-hmm. That people can use that's adapted for people with developmental disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the other thing that people need are the structures within their family health teams or whatever the context is that they're working in, so that they can have some help to actually complete something like this. And it has to do with the structures for connecting with other team members
mm-hmm.
to work together on these things, connecting with specialists, and actually involving family members and caregivers in as partners of care in a very effective way. So I think those are all pretty big goals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we actually have a study that we're undertaking to implement this in various family health teams in the province and just find out better how to actually make this a reality
mm-hmm.
And a kind of something that's practical and doable
mm-hmm.
for any kind of family physician in the province.
Mm-hmm.
Just knowing that this, for instance, is one thing that they could do that could be very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like, you know, we're making a lot of incredible progress, but obviously there's still a lot of work to do. So we're just about out of time. I was just wondering, Dr. Sullivan, if you have any final message or any final words for the public on this topic that you wanted to get out there.
Well, I think that you know, the theme of this radio show is health and justice. And in the background, I think the big issue is really some notion of justice that is not simply kind of on the level of kind of equality. It actually has to do with equity, which means that those people that really, you know, have difficulties with their health would not be able to advocate for themselves, that we actually as a community recognize that vulnerability and do our best as a matter of justice to make sure that they're getting the care they need.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that this, I would see all of these efforts as really a work of justice,
mm-hmm.
kind of trying to ensure that kind of our family members, our brothers and sisters, and those members of the community that have developmental disabilities are being cared for and are flourishing as best they can by a supportive and enabling community and environment.
Mm-hmm. It's a great message. Thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Sullivan. We appreciate your time.
You're very welcome.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Health Justice Radio Collective. Tune in next week.